Welcome to Motormania. I'm Damien Reid, and this is the only interactive car show on UAE Radio. We're going to give you motoring advice. We're going to talk about what's happening in the car world. And of course, you get to have a voice on road safety issues as well. We'll be keeping you company all the way through until noon. Here's a little idea of what's coming up. We've got a full house in here today. The Shanjada is in the studio. Noel Ebden is joining us as well to update on the car and motorcycle world. We're also with the Korean car maker Kia at their world debut of the EV3. It's all electric, subcompact SUV. Is this the electric vehicle that you will be replacing your car with? Well, we'll get to talk about that and find out a little bit more. We're also going to be talking about tyres, taking care of your tyres during the summer months, when you should change them, and the difference between the tyres, say, on a Toyota and tyres on a Tesla, the EVs. All that we're going to be talking about with Bernard Akinja from Goodyear, and that's coming up straight after this. We've got a full house in the studio this morning. We've got a whole lot of things going on. Noel Ebden back in the studio. Good morning, Noel. Morning. Nice to have you back in the studio.
Morning.
Yim Shanjada has joined us this morning.
I have arrived on time.
And, of course, Naz Chowdhury is sticking around for the second hour. And we've got a lot to talk about this morning. We're talking about all things to do with a Goodyear and some sensible car advice about what to do with your tyres right now. As we're heading into the summer months, we've got a lot of people who ask us every year about what do you do during the summer months with tyres and a whole lot of other things, EVs as well. So what should you keep in mind to make sure that your tyres are keeping you safe on the roads? And for that, we've got Bernard Akinja. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. You're the Director of PBU Consumer for Emerging Markets at Goodyear.
Yes.
I think I got that right, Kes?
Yes, Damien. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much for joining us. It's a discussion that comes up quite often about what happens with this thing with summer coming on. What can we do to keep our tyres in top shape over the hot months? What can people do, for instance, if they leave their car for summer and they go home, the car stays away for 6 weeks and that sort of thing? But also rainy days. I mean, rain is now a new thing for us that's here to stay. And how are we going? I mean, how have you found, for instance, in the last few weeks with all the flooding and everything else, how has that impacted with what Goodyear is doing in terms of people phoning you? Or has it impacted your supply getting them through?
Well, obviously, the recent rain wasn't much expected, right? And we all had some tough time. And of course, with regard to the tires, the wet performance is completely different when it comes to overall summer performance. So from tires perspective, we need to check the wet grip rating, which is also indicated in the GSO label. So that's one important thing, because that also indicates the grip of the tire when it comes to slippery or wet conditions. And another thing is as well the pattern, right? Because it needs to be evacuate the water immediately when it comes to slippery surfaces provide a good aquaplaning. But in terms of overall tires, of course, a lot of cars got damaged. So we have the supply. So feel free to reach out, and our tires are quite have very good ratings. So please, everyone, feel free to reach out.
Absolutely, no.
Yeah. What was that code again on the car?
You GSO. Said there
was the GSO. How would you find that on the tire?
It's on the label. It's on the tire. It comes with the label as required by GSO, and it has different gradings for different things. And one of them is also the wet grip rating.
So for viewers that aren't up on their tires, what are they looking for on the tire? Does it say GSO? So and then a number or
no? There's the label with some grading, with some letters. It says wet grip. It has a sustainability part, fuel efficiency, and other things.
Right.
So and it has different kinds of labeling with different kinds of letters. So just go for a good one, and you'll be fine on the wet roads.
Perfect.
So if I look at the sticker, I think it's a sticker that comes affixed to the tire before it's fixed on the car. So when you're in the tire shop, you'll see the sticker on the car and on the tires.
Yeah.
And that sticker obviously gets removed from the tire with the RFID tag. Otherwise, it won't
do
very good.
So you never see it, really.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Yeah.
So before, if you're shopping, I don't know if anybody does that. I mean, I do, but it's a bit sad.
You do, yes.
Yeah, I do. It's a bit sad. But if you're wandering around the tire shop and
you're a frequent flyer with buying tires, aren't you?
Really? I'm getting it from all sides. I can feel it. But it's true. You'll see the stickers, as Berna said, and the ratings will be there. So if you don't know what you're doing, or if you don't trust the tire shop, just look at the tires themselves.
Correct.
Yeah, and that brings another point. UAE is one of the few countries where we go by law, the expiry date on the tyres. A lot of countries just run the tyre for as long as you need and sell it. But here, you might not get your car passed through the registration if you don't have, you know, those the tyres that are within their window. So how can someone find out how old their tyre is?
That's a very good question, because you said it very rightly. So overall, the global recommendation is the tyres are good to go after 10 years of manufacturing. Oh. That's the global recommendation. Okay, but then every country has different regulations.
Mm.
And UAE is one of the most strict one with 4 years. So you have to replace your tires after the manufacturing date of 4 years. But it totally depends on how you maintain your tire and how you drive and how you store the tire, so the tire life. So it's quite subjective, actually.
Yeah.
And it's very dynamic. But we, as Goodyear, we give 5-year manufacturing guarantee.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe in UAE it's so strict because they want to make sure the safety of the people is to ensure the safety of the people. That's why
and
it's like.
To be fair, and I've noticed it too, when I go away during the middle of summer, say it's August or something, even if I go away for 1 week and I come back and I get in the car, or 2 weeks, or, you know, usually, but even as short as, say, 1 week or 10 days, the first sort of kilometre or two, the car feels like it's got a wobble and it's up, 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 because the tyre has gone square because of the hot weather and the soft rubber, and it sits. Then once you get heat and the rolling mass moving, then it comes back to you. But you don't find that in other parts of the world, not when the car's sitting there untouched in, you know, 55 degree heat for a week. So it's a good thing that the UAE is doing this, because it's they're conditions you don't experience anywhere else.
The other thing as well with tyres here is that the roads here are extremely smooth compared to a lot of the rest of the world.
Mm.
And so when it rains, it is more slippery than it is. Yeah. Like in the UK, if it rains, the roads don't change a great deal. Out here, the roads change hugely when it does rain, because they're so good. The roads are almost too good, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you've got to have a good tyre.
And there's a lot of dust as well, which makes it even more slippery.
Yes, absolutely. And grainy as well. Yeah. Bern, I want to ask you about, obviously, fuel efficiency is a very important thing with vehicles now, especially as we're going into electrification and everything else. So EVs, everyone talks about EVs being, you know, zero emission and they're very aerodynamic in the way they look, but the tyre still has to do its job in terms of, because you have put the wrong tyre on it, you affect the vehicle's range.
Right.
Tell me a little bit about EV tyres.
Okay. So EV vehicles, let's say EV electric vehicles, are different from conventional vehicles in three major ways. So one of this is they obviously are run by a battery, which makes a higher load on the bottom of the car.
Mm.
So, and then the second one is also they reach higher speed at a shorter duration of time, which also applies a higher torque. And then the third one, obviously, they're much less quiet. So they also tire needs to be also much, provide less quiet drive, a more quiet drive.
Mm.
So the tires that are made for EVs needs to be able to handle higher torques, bigger loads, and as well as need to be very, very quiet.
Because that's the one thing I notice, I don't know about you guys, when you test new cars, when you get into an EV car, the first thing you notice is, wow, all I can hear now is the tyre noise, which unfortunately puts it straight on the head of the tyre manufacturers going, why are you making noisy tyres? They're not. It's just that there's no sound of an engine anymore. Yeah. And also because they're reducing, not only is there no engine noise, but they're reducing sound insulation to keep the car light as possible, because an EV is a very heavy car anyway.
That's right, yeah.
So it puts a bit of pressure back on people like yourselves at Goodyear.
And you have acoustic tuners for tyres, don't you? You have people who actually they make the pattern less or more noisy, and think I've actually witnessed at a tyre manufacturer. Yeah.
Yes, that's correct. And there's also a new technology called the sound comfort technology, which makes sure the tyres are delivering the high performance with a much less noise. And this is especially made for EV tyres. And what we made in Goodyear is also we made the all portfolio EV ready, which means they are able to be fitted both in conventional cars and into electric vehicle cars, and they will still deliver the same level of high performance.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So any Goodyear tyre can be used on an EV, is that right?
Yeah.
Do you find that impacts the range of the vehicle? Or is Goodyear involved in with a manufacturer saying, right, manufacturer's going to claim we get 600 kilometres out of a vehicle? Do they ring people like yourselves or your competitors and say, we need to fit your tyres to in order to reach that limit?
So what happens over there is, I believe you are mentioning more the rolling resistance part.
Yeah, exactly.
So
yeah,
we need to, so that is again on the label, referring back to our discussion earlier. And then you can also find the rolling resistance, which needs to be quite low in order to give the best mileage per charge, let's say, because that's the main idea,
that's
right?
It.
That's the main concern of the drivers when driving electric vehicles.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, I've just got one question, which is tyre related. I've seen, let's say, for example, Goodyear would have a tyre, and let's say we go for a standard tyre size, 285, whatever, yeah? But then you can have the same tyre size, 1,000 dirhams or 2,000 dirhams. I'm assuming it's the same rubber. All I see on the picture is the tread slightly different. But how can a performance tyre be so much more expensive than a budget tyre from the same manufacturer?
Think about it like that. Every tyre offers a package, and this package comes as a different combination of durability, mileage, handling, braking, noise, and other dimensions. Mm-hmm. So every tire actually offers a different package. And the compound is different accordingly, and the construction is different accordingly. They look the same. All of them are black and round, right?
Exactly.
But then the performance of the tire and what it offers is different. For example, if you're like a daily commuter, like running daily errands, you know, not doing much, then you would want more mileage maybe from your car.
So you go for a harder compound.
Yeah, and then maybe if you have a sporty car and you want to drive fast, then you want more control and handling. So you go for a different compound, different pattern, and your expectation from the tires would be different. So that's why the price is different and the pattern is different. Yeah.
Fantastic. Look, Bernard Akinja, thank you so much for joining us. We made tyres interesting, I think, which is
thank you.
Congratulations, everyone. We've all done
for
it
for a lot longer.
we could go on this forever. But Director of PBU Consumer for Emerging Markets at Goodyear, you're always welcome back in the studio. Let's think of some other tyre questions, and we'll summer's coming on. It's the one thing we always need to fit on our cars, and it's the most important thing. As all the guys say, it's the only thing that keeps the car connected to the road, so a vital part of the car. Bernard Akinja, thanks so much for joining us on Motor Mania, and we'll see you next time.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So do stick around. We've got a lot more coming up on Motor Mania straight after this.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Motor Mania with Damien Reid.
Welcome back to Motor Mania, and we've got a full house in the studio this morning, we should say. Still morning time. Noel Ebden is back from the UK for a short time. Good to see you back.
I know I've been away for a while. We have to remember to switch me on.
and Shanjato in the studio as well.
Always.
Good to see you back, and Naz is sticking around as well. Yes, so we've all been running around in various cars and bikes and various things. Noel, You've kept your dance card full with a few vehicles lately. Tell me what you've been up to.
Yeah, so I've been two and four wheels. So I was on the new 2024 R1300 GS BMW, otherwise known as the GS to everyone else.
But,
this is the new version. So it's now up to 1300 cc. Remember when it first came out and they were 1200 cc?
Yeah.
Still got the big flat twin motor.
So keeps your knees warm.
Yep, exactly. somewhere to warm your toes. Yeah, exactly. Look, I mean, this is a fantastic. I mean, it's 237 kilograms, but you would never know.
Wow.
You would never know because the weight is so low down. Mm. It's you can chuck it about like an off road bike.
But can you lean on? I mean, because of the flat engine, or you have to keep it.
Yeah,
you can.
It's got plenty of because the suspension's so high on it. I mean, it's an adventure bike at the end of the day. Think long way round type sort of type bike. You know, they've got so much ground clearance, but the way they ride is so. This is for me. This is the way forward. Adventure bikes are the answer. Sports bikes are great, but there's speed limits everywhere, and they're now getting too fast. Commuter bikes are great, but they run out of power a little bit. And so, an adventure bike is the way to travel.
So, the crossover, like the cross SUV kind
of. Yeah, it's kind of it mirrors two wheels. It mirrors the car industry, really, in a sense, in that everyone's buying SUVs, and now in the bike industry, everyone's buying adventure bikes.
So, is this the Raptor of motorcycles?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, the Japanese all make adventure bikes.
Or is it the Porsche 911 Dakar?
Yeah, well, yes. Good. That's actually probably more of a... Yeah, that's probably a better way to put it. I mean, you know, it's It's 145 horsepower, which, I mean, you know your bikes. I mean, these days, that's, I mean, it's a fair chunk of horsepower for a bike. I mean, that weighs, you know, as I say, 237 kgs. If you do drop it, you can pick them up. You just have to know how to do it.
Yeah.
But now it's got full. I mean, the DTC system, the Motorrad DTC system, is amazing. I mean, you can set all these different riding modes. It's got traction control, the whole works, TFT display. I mean, they're turning into cars these days, these big bikes. It's got hill start.
Really?
Yeah. So you don't roll backwards.
I thought that was your feet.
It will. But not when it's over 200 kilograms. Of course, exactly. The indicators are built into the hand guards. I mean, this is a sleek.
Has it got downhill ascent? Is a stupid question, but you've got hill start.
That's more on you're using your fingers because you control that one. But there's a lot of bikes in this segment out there, but the BMW is the most comfortable. Yeah. It's also the most expensive of all of them, but that you're paying for comfort.
Yeah.
I mean, I you sit on that bike, you don't get uncomfortable.
That's where BMW made their reputation, isn't it? I mean, they've moved into sports bikes and MotoGP and Grand Prix superbikes and everything else, but their wheelhouse is long distance, couple of thousand kilometre tourers, fantastic bikes.
You can ride a long way on that bike before you need to get off, whereas I've ridden a lot of the competition. I haven't ridden the KTM yet. That's next on the list. I'd be interested to see how the 1290 is with the comfort-wise, but the Japanese versions, just they're great, they're fantastic bikes, and they're cheaper, but they're not as comfortable.
Yeah,
that makes a big, big difference. Interesting thing, it's 100. So full spec, the new one is 100,000 dirhams, which is a lot for a bike these days. Bikes are getting expensive. You know, I mean, you just look at these things; they're all getting expensive. But that comes with a 5-year warranty.
Okay. Wow.
And 5 years or 50,000 kilometer service package. So it's turning into the car industry. In the old days, you used to buy a bike and the warranty was to the end of the street.
Yeah.
And
you paid more than $15,000, you're getting ripped off.
Exactly. But things have changed. Look, it's a great bike. If you're going to go touring, I mean, BMW is the one, it really is. So
Yeah. And they really put on the map by Charlie Borman and the guys doing Long Way Down back in the day.
Yeah.
I believe there was another manufacturer who didn't take part, and they went, okay, we'll buy our own BMWs. And then those phone BMWs said, look, we're running them. Can you give us a hand? Best investment BMW ever made, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that came out really well. Look, personally, I wouldn't buy this model. I'd wait for the more off-road version, which is also due out shortly in this region. But this is a great bike. I mean, fantastic. I'd go out and buy one tomorrow.
Yeah, so. Fantastic. Four wheels. You're in the Infiniti.
Yeah, strange.
The QX60.
Strange.
And we get a lot of calls, don't we, Naz, about people saying, why don't you talk up the Infiniti more? Yeah. Why doesn't Infiniti talk up Infiniti more? Because you've
100%.
You know?
Yep.
They're the sleeping giant. They're part of Nissan. Not many people know about them.
No, and this one, and especially this one, because everybody knows the QX80,
right?
And the big slab of a car that you see on the highways, right?
Yeah,
this whale. Exactly. It's a whale, isn't it? This is the same car. It's not the same car, obviously, but it's the same type of car, but it's that little bit smaller. A little bit more dynamic, but you still get all of the trim, right? So it's still seven seats. Imagine the difference between Range Rover and Range Rover Sport.
Yeah.
That's probably my best way of comparing it. So, it's got a 3.5 V6 motor in it, so it goes.
Which is a good engine.
That Nissan
3.5 V6 is
strong engine, yeah.
Yeah.
279 horsepower, 350 newton meters of torque. So it's not going to set the world on fire speed-wise, but you don't need it to. It's not what it's for, right? The nice thing, 9-speed gearbox as well.
Wow.
So you drive it, you don't feel much. You don't feel like it's not struggling. Let's put it that way. It's just it's very smooth to drive. What I thought was quite good is the trim inside is top notch. It is really good inside. I mean, it's up there with the luxury car manufacturers, the top luxury car manufacturers. But it runs all the way through. So even in the rear seats, it's as well trimmed as it is in the front.
Okay.
So they've properly done a good job. Outside, I mean, the looks are, it's fine. It's nice. It's it's not cutting edge, but it's a good looking car. And for me, it's just that little bit smaller than the QX80 on it. Just so easier to park, easier to sort of get through traffic. It's not as intimidating as a QX80, but I quite like that. I think it's a very overlooked car. I think that if you're looking for a decent big SUV, but you don't want to go that full size American style big slab of a car. Get down to Infiniti and have a look at these. I mean, they're $300,000 starting price, which for a luxury car these days is not a lot.
Yeah. One thing I found, I drove that car a while ago. One thing I found is that because it's not a hybrid, the 3.5 V6. Is that you're finding now? I don't know about you, Shan, but you find that when you drive these cars, you kind of expect that instant electric torque, even partly there. Like I had the Lincoln Nautilus the other day, which is a hybrid, and it's the same thing. You expect that sort of instant takeoff, and then the combustion
cars have changed, right?
And it's very quickly changed your mindset. And that's one thing I noticed with the QX60 is that you think, where's the electric bit? Even though it's a fine, but in the sense, I mean, you find that with these sort of, especially these mid-size SUVs.
We've seen that change, right, in the way that engines are delivered. So it started with these 1.5 and 2-litre turbos, and the entire industry loves 2-litre turbos, and the Middle East has been sort of late to the party, but now gets it. So what's interesting about 2-litre turbo, they tune them to have a big slab of torque or push or pull or whatever you call it right at the start, just like an electric car, just like a hybrid system. So there's no top end because nobody presses the pedal that long to go all the way to the end of the rev range. Now the Infiniti, and by extension all Nissan V6s with the 3.5, which is all of them, reward you if you drive it all the way up to 7,000, 8,000 RPM. It's like an old school motor. But actually what people expect is to have the immediate push like a Tesla, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
That's the difference. And car companies like that because on the test drive, when you do a 3-minute test drive, this car feels pretty nippy. At low speed, nobody goes flat out. Nobody does on a test drive. Or the salesman would say, tut, 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 wouldn't let you do that. So actually, you're having a kind of old school experience with the V6. It won't last because everything will be turbo. I mean, the new Patrol is going twin turbo V6.
The 9-speed helps, to be fair, because it's got a lot of gears. So
Too many gears?
No, actually, I normally don't like a lot of gears. But this one is good. It's got a gear for each speed you want to go.
I don't know about you guys. I had the 10-speed auto in a Ford product a few weeks ago.
That's right.
Great for economy, but always found that it's constantly changing gears and shifting around, which is a little under my skin a little bit.
a little bit of a hunter.
So, exactly.
So this wasn't. I always found that with JLR product. JLR product with too many gears was always changing gear, and it was changing gear at the wrong moment when you wanted to pull out into traffic and all those kind of things. I'm thinking the early Evoques and the E-Pace and all these kind of things. This was always in the right gear.
Yeah.
So for people who don't know what this is about, like, what is this indecision in gearboxes? What is that? What does it feel like to somebody who's looking for a car? Like, what should they expect?
You know, with a manual car, you get the car in the right gear and you sit at the junction and you can see a gap.
Yeah.
And you go and go.
Yeah.
And then when you're in an automatic car with 10 gears, quite often the car goes, I'm just going to change gear right now. And you go, no, not right now, because I need to go.
Yeah.
And by the time it's got the
gear.
Or it's got to change down. By the time it's done that, you've missed your gap and you're pulling out in front of somebody.
Well, with the 10-speed autos, you're in sort of fifth or sixth gear by the time you've cleared the intersection.
Exactly.
Literally.
Exactly. Yeah. But no, I didn't find that with this. I found the gearbox was lovely, really nice.
Good stuff.
So, yeah.
Let's get on to, there was a world reveal happening this week, and it was the Kia EV3. Now, Kia has launched the fourth model of its battery electric vehicle range. It's the subcompact crossover, the EV3. It's going to be on sale in Korea in July, then in Europe in the fourth quarter, and for the Asian markets, looking at early next year. So we haven't got a chance to speak to Karim Habib, who's the head of global design. Funnily enough, we're just talking about Infiniti. He was the head of design at Infiniti and from this part of the world, and he is one of the movers and shakers of the Middle East in the car industry. He's now head of global design at Kia. And this is what he had to say about the EV3.
One last element in the console that I'm very impressed by what our team designed is this idea of a table. So we know that, of course, there's situations where you're waiting or you're in traffic. And, of course, when you're charging, you have the possibility to put your snack here, or even if you need to do some work, you have a very comfortable and clean surface to do so. So we talked about this horizontal floating dashboard. We do so, of course, this horizontal line work or graphics is very important for this feeling of space. We have a lot of space, but we want to accentuate that. And that's why we continue that into the doors. And you can see the materials and the graphics, again, expand that visual horizontality, visual width. that is also underlined or supported by our ventilation, also thin vertical, and of course our 30-inch screen here that is horizontally laid out, that has of course a touch screen and, you know, media control on the screen. But we have kept, as we did on the EV9, some of the buttons that we believe are what our customers require or want to have as direct access, as example, heating controls or access to map and so on.
Yeah, Karim Habib, head of global design of Kia, running through some interior features. One of the things I liked about what he said, guys, is that he's made a point that buttons and dials are staying for the important stuff. It's not all screens. Brilliant. They're brilliant. Dropping the whole idea where everything should be a screen. There's going to be certain features that will always be hardwired buttons and dials that we need to find easy to reach. So good work from those guys.
Yeah,
did you say 30-inch screen?
We're going to get that in a second. Yeah, across several screens, all adds up to about 30 inches, and it is, it's like sitting in front of
a... That's a TV, isn't
it? It's a widescreen cinema. Yes, yeah. It's crazy. So it's initially going to be offered with a single electric motor producing about 201 horsepower, but with a choice of two nickel cobalt manganese batteries. So that gives a standard range. That will give it a standard range. It's going to have a 58.3 kilowatt hour motor. Range about 410 kilometres on that. However, the long-range cars, and this is the good thing for a subcompact, it's going to get the 81.4 kilowatt-hour motor. That's going to get you 600 kilometre range out of this car, which is, according to that, no one else is going anywhere near it, far better than anything else. So its competitors are the VW ID.3, the Volvo EX30 and the Renault Megane, none of which are on sale here anyway, so...
Officially.
when it does get here, it will be pretty much on its own. Also, Kia President and CEO Jo Sung Sung was there as well, and he said that this range of Kia EVs will make electric vehicles more accessible to motorists. But he also had some other interesting things to say about their overall strategy on where they're moving with EV against other combustion engine alternatives. This was the Kia president and CEO.
The EV3 is supposed to extend EV ownership to a much broader group of customers. The EV3 will do this by removing the barriers that has so far prevented some drivers making the switch to electric mobility. Despite the current global fluctuations in EV demand, we are highly confident in our EV strategy.
So, putting it very nicely, global fluctuations in EV demand, they're tanking.
Yep.
So what they're doing is they're keeping their combustion engine cars will remain as hybrids for the foreseeable future. So they've got two ranges, the EV4, EV2 and EV5 models are all, as it says, pure electric, but the demand for ICE engines, combustion engines and hybrids are still there. So they're going to name them the K3, the K4, et cetera. So the names that we know, like Rio and Serato, and everything, are all going to change to this kind of thing. Because you say, it's interesting, you gave away an interesting figure. He said, because that Europe is the most aggressive adopter of electric vehicles, as we all know, still only accounts for 30% of the total market.
It's also an aggressive dropper
and it's going
of EV.
Exactly.
Of EV.
So at the moment, you can say it's peaked at 30% and it's going the other way. Yeah. It's heading downwards.
Yeah.
So they're keeping their options open for that one. The interior of this car, again, going back to what Karim was saying, sustainable interior, which is what everyone's going to now. So I know it sounds a bit bizarre, but recycled plastic bottles are being used to create the carpet and a wool-like textile.
Ooh, crackly.
Yeah.
I've got absolutely loads to help them out. Just tell me where I can drop them off.
Yeah, there should be plenty around here. Hopefully not crackly. The headliner material it's like a wool feeling textile for the seats and the headline material. Also using bio components for the paint. Even the dashboard has been using components of sugarcane to create the dash. Just hope it doesn't grow. And the interior used mycelium, which is a fungus-based material. let's hope that doesn't stick around for the, after the
we
post.
We were going
post
really post well until we got to the fungus, and then the fungus, I was like, hmm.
Yeah, so keep your Kia EV3 in a dry storage place.
I thought a sustainable interior was one that lasted a long time. So anyway, there you go.
So you say 30-inch widescreen. That's because there's two 12.3-inch touchscreens plus a 12-inch head-up display. So that adds up to the whole thing.
It's like a fighter pilot. Yes.
There's high-speed streaming for your streaming platforms such as Netflix and others as well, for video content, for when your car is – well, if it's a petrol car, you say it's broken down, but when it's recharging, you can watch
so they're something. Trying to distract the fact that you've got to sit for 3 hours by allowing you to watch Netflix.
Yeah. Excellent. If you get high-speed streaming. So.
I'm not going to comment anymore on this. I'm just going to keep quiet in the corner.
They've also got Kia's AI assistants. So part of their video presentation, they say that apparently customers who want to decorate the interior of their car can do it in a way that they would decorate their smartphone. For instance, when it goes on sale in North America, you'll be able to decorate the interior with your favourite football team or whatever. So let's have a listen to what their presentation said about their Kia's AI assistant.
Hey Kia, can you introduce yourself?
I'm Kia Assistant, created by Kia to provide information and assistance. I can help answer questions, provide recommendations, and assist with various tasks. How can I assist you today?
So
that
there you
freaks
go.
Me out.
That's in the car. I know. I find this a little bit
very
concerning. I don't like computers talking to me.
Do you remember
like
the
that.
Old days when we drove cars?
I know. Well, you know what?
No, actually.
Okay. I'm glad you brought this up because one of the things at the end of the presentation was no one actually mentioned the drivetrain or the power unit. I had to go and research that separately and find out myself. No
it's
one,
almost
no
irrelevant,
said,
isn't
it? Is it one motor or two motors or three motors? Is it what the wattage is? Is it whatever? So as it turns out, because Kia does have access to the 800-volt architecture, they've decided to keep it at 400 volts to keep it more affordable. But that means it's going to take longer to charge compared to an 800V vehicle. Mm. So for a global price range, they're looking at $35,000 to $50,000. So they're between 130 to 150,000 dirhams. It should be when it gets here. Mm. But it won't be the fastest charging vehicle around because of the 400. But it will give you that 560 to 600 kilometre range out of a subcompact kind of cars. They're looking to sell around about 200,000 of these units globally. So it's going to be a volume car for Kia. But yeah, I mean, I take your point. I was waiting to talk about the actual guts of the power unit and whatever it is, but it was the presentation was 90% about the interior and Netflix.
But do you think, Damien, that the difference is where we come from, right? Because we're interested in the drive of the car, we're interested in the technology, but the people who might be buying this car are more interested in things like Netflix. They're more interested in the wool seats or the fungal materials because it's something to talk about. If you tell somebody that you've got a 140 kilowatt energy unit driving your car, most people are like, okay.
You're right.
It doesn't mean anything.
I see it as like mobile phones in terms of no one talks about the processor.
They used to, not anymore.
But now it's what apps have you got? What's the screen? Yeah. And that's kind of where.
And I think even more so with electric cars because, in my opinion, like the DNA, the soul of the car was the combustion engine.
Mm.
But now that you've gone with this electrification, sadly, they're soulless. So you need to bring some life back into them.
So
it can't be done through the engine. Mm. It has to be done through art and fungus and God knows what.
Not the fungus. But I
don't think that's going to be on their sales material, art and fungus and things.
It's not the fungus. I think you look at early mobile phones, we're in that transition period, right? When you were everybody is a Nokia 3310. If you're of a certain age, you understand what this phone is. An iconic design, or the 8850. These are the Matrix phone, right?
Yeah.
Now, the phones, the software is pretty much the same, but they couldn't do much. Now, as we move to a plate of glass, all the phones look the same, and it doesn't really matter. So have you got an iPhone or have you got something else? But in the early days, they were differentiated through the exterior, through the body. Mm. I have the same feeling about this name thing that he mentioned.
Yep.
Because now it's K2, K3, K4.
For the combustion charge, yeah.
I don't know if Rio or Serato or were great names, but they were names.
They were names, yeah.
And now we have K2, K3, K4. So it's just like, have you got the big one or the small one?
Yeah, exactly. And they said that. They said we're adopting the global thing's gone. I think BMW began it.
In other words,
with the 3 Series, 5 Series, 7 Series. Yeah. Audi then did it as well.
You knew where you were.
Yeah, and so they've gone down that path. But anyway, we'll see how that goes. I prefer the old names, but anyway, that's where we are. So there you go. That's the Kia EV3. Mm. And
by just FYI, I did once buy a car with a fungus interior, but it wasn't supposed to have a fungus interior.
Yeah, I left the windows down in mine for about 10 years. Yeah. Anyway, that's the Kia EV3. It should be out here, I think, probably by the end of the year.
You're listening to the UAE's number one talk radio station.
This is Motormania with Damien Reid.
Yes, Motormania with you for the last few moments until midday. And to take us out, we've got a little bit of news that's popped up. We noticed this morning, courtesy of the Khalij Times, talking about the floods and the insurance claims. I mean, this is something that's really a lot of people are talking about. Estimates found that the number of motor claims in April alone is equivalent to the past 12 years, according to Dubai-based insurance brokers. Now, we were all impacted by the heavy rainfall and the floods that hit the UAE on April 16. Who can forget? I mean, I was literally landing on a flight. Just got the last plane out of Dubai and home to my place here when that all broke. It was crazy stuff. The Central Bank of the UAE, which supervises and regulates the insurance sector, said that they have not seen so many claims caused by a single natural incident. Insurance brokers estimated that approximately, get this, 100,000 vehicles in the country were affected in that 48 hours.
I called that 2 weeks ago, remember? I said 100,000.
I mean, that's crazy. A lot of them are written off. But that is crazy. I mean, I noticed, you know, when you go down and get on the metro, it's like rush hour 24/7 because everyone's car is either written off or in the shop.
Well, I as you know, I flew in last weekend and I'm leaving tomorrow.
Yeah.
I struggled to hire a car.
Really?
Because there's no hire cars. Yeah. Because everyone's had to hire – the hire car company's got nothing.
Did you have to hire a Lamborghini then? The only one they had left.
I wish.
Turn
I
that
wish.
Ship around and send my cars back for 3 days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Bring my cars back. I need them. Yeah.
You're a lucky man then, I guess. You got your cars out of here before that hit because that who knows what could have happened when
exactly.
you were here.
Yeah, I flew out literally a week before it happened and then was sat in the UK watching it unfold.
But also too, Naz, it's not just like private owners. The industry got hit with cars that were sitting in holding yards and
big
on docks.
Time.
And
big time. And this is why I said the number would get a lot higher than people were initially expecting at 50,000 because as and when these claims come out, you'll start to see them. And there's such a backlog in terms of the way things happen because it's like in order for a car to be written off, it needs to go through a certain number of steps. So the insurance company needs to know about it, instruct a third-party garage to inspect it, get the estimation, figure out it's beyond economical repair, autopsy report essentially, and then, now we're gonna say this car is written off, and then it goes to the salvage auction. I've been speaking to some guys at Copart that have so that's the largest salvage auction globally.
Yeah,
who have some flooded cars online, and they've had a few flooded cars on a couple of weeks ago. So I just called up about one out of curiosity, and they're like, "No, this is from the February flood."
Wow,
they're like, "We haven't even seen the influx of the April floods yet."
So that's crazy.
It's 12. Yeah, so it's and to have 12 years worth of claims in
48 wasn't to 70, it, 72
wasn't
hours.
It, wasn't it 12 years worth of rainfall as well? Is there a coincidence there? I don't
remember. It was two and a half years.
Yeah. So there's some direct linear thing there. But I mean, look, the first thing that strikes me there is insurance premiums.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate side of things that
something
you cannot get away with it without some sort of kind of impact.
And they've already gone up as well, right? So if you guys renewed an insurance policy this year, you'll see that it's significantly higher, up to 50% higher than it was last year. And that was pre-floods.
Yeah.
So the insurance industry here, I think, is maturing. I remember the good old days when you want to insure your car third party and they're like 4-cylinder, 6-cylinder, 8-cylinder.
Yeah, exactly.
2-door, 4-door, right? And then they just punch the calculator and it's like automatic, 400, 500, 600 times. But it's matured so much now and that's also going to reflect in the prices.
Also too, and the advice we're giving on the last show to a couple of callers about their car has been written off and what does the insurance company ask? And so what we've noticed is the insurance companies are modifying their procedure a little bit in order to streamline things. So no longer will an assessor come to your house in the majority and have a look at things. They'll say, send the car to a yard and we'll just evaluate and assess everything. If it's a modern-ish car, like last time a Toyota Camry on the last show, of 5 to 6 years old, it's going to be the book value. So don't worry, you're going to get the book value. If it's something rarer, then yeah, you might need to have a bit of a discussion about it. But anyway, that's the news on the floods, and hopefully we won't have any more of that to talk about for quite some time. Things are shaping up, and people are getting back on the road again. So that's about all I've got time for Motor Mania for this week. Thank you guys for joining us. Noel, quickly, you've got something happening tonight.
I'm off to Yas. We're testing Vendetta Racing's Bonneville world speed record bike. You had Alan on the show last week.
Yes.
And we're testing it tonight at Yas, private event. Record. We're just giving it a run, shakedown test.
He's turbocharged Ducati. That got a lot of viewers, a lot of people interested in that one. Well done. Yep. Keep us posted on that.
Yep. You can just follow Vendetta Racing UE on Instagram. You can see everything. And we're going to post a load of stuff on there as well. So
fantastic. And a bit of a change coming up. That's it for me for Motor Mania for a few months anyway. As sad as that is, I'm going to step away and take a bit of time out. So, of course, Motor Mania will keep going. The gang's going to be here. Imp the Shan, I'm handing over the golden microphone.
I am taking the lead of the golden microphone.
And all those buttons, flashy buttons as well.
You will be in the hot seat for the next several shows while I take a break back in Australia. But, of course, you're all chipping in here. Couldn't have done it without you all. Naz, Imp the Shan, Noel, thank you so much.
No problem.
Of course, the crew behind the scene, Isa May, Arthur, Zena Zalamea, thank you guys. That is the Filipino posse that runs this show behind the scenes.
They keep it going.
There is no show without them.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I'm going to miss all this. It's a good fun show, but I will be sticking around because you're going to catch me online from far parts of the world for the next few months. So we've got lots of content that I'm still going to chip in.
As am I. So yeah,
a roving correspondent.
You can't get rid of us. Yeah.
We are going
Multimania goes international. I think that's the best way of saying it.
Absolutely.
Yes, it's rebrand.
It's a global show now. Yeah.
We've got a few things coming up that I'm going to be getting my head stuck into while I'm away. And then after the summer months, inshallah, I'll be back and we'll carry on. But Motor Mania is not going anywhere. Best motoring show on UAE radio, that's for sure.
And thank you, Damien. Thank you for being an amazing host all these years.
Oh, thank you very much. It's not a job. It's absolute pleasure with you guys, and it's like a little coffee club. It's fine without the coffee. Microphones instead. It's great stuff.
So it's not a coffee club at all.
But anyway, that's about all I've got time for this week. Thank you guys for sticking around, and we're going to sign off with a bit of golden earring, and we'll see you, or Imp the Shan, we'll see you in 2 weeks' time for more Motor Mania.